It is time now for The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are going to talk about the latest developments on the campaign trail. And that campaign trail is winding its way through Wisconsin as well. We'll talk about Donald Trump's taxes. We'll talk about Bill Clinton's comments on Obamacare. We'll talk about the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to not take up the appeal of John Doe 2, and talk about some possible continued legal action when it comes to voter ID. Plus, whatever else you want to discuss at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We have with us two of your favorite Week in Review guests, John Sharpless and Joe Winicky, and we will welcome them in just a moment. But first, let me welcome in Bill Martins, as this is the last weekday of the fall membership drive. Hi, Bill.
Hello. You know, last hour we heard from 65 listeners. Man, oh man, thank you so much for those pledges. We are now 2 for 2 on reaching our goals this morning. So let's do 3 for 3. We need 45 pledges this hour, and you can help us meet that goal by making a contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And the programs you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio, thanks to your support.
You are listening to The Week in Review because you appreciate in-depth and civil discussion of the issues of the day. You appreciate hearing all sides and different sides of the issues most of the time.
Most of the time.
And you enjoy participating in these discussions. Now we hope that you will go beyond listening and participating in the discussions, and you will pledge your support, help pay for these programs with your pledge of any amount, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Let's see, we talked about Tell Joy Where to Go at 6 o'clock this morning, and we talked about colorism last hour, and now we've got the Week in Review, and we're going to be talking about the presidential election, a little bit about the hurricane, and just cover it all just about here on the Joy Cardine Show. And if that's what you've come to know and love on Fridays, then make a pledge of support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, thank you for that first pledge this hour. 44 pledges to go to reach our goal, and on this very last weekday of the pledge drive, of the fall membership drive, I certainly hope that we will meet and exceed that goal.
You give to WPR to support the programs you love, and sometimes you just can't resist asking for the latest WPR logo thank you gift. This drive, we've got something that everyone will love and can use. 2 WPR pint glasses. Give $7 a month and ask for your very own set. These pint glasses feature both the WPR and the NPR logos, and they'll make a great addition to your WPR collection. Check them out at WPR.org. Ask for your pair of WPR pint glasses when you give $7 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And that's your thank you gift for your pledge of $7 a month or more to pint glasses. So, Bill, what would you put your one of your pumpkin ales in there, or what?
Could do that. I wouldn't turn that down.
Well, I would. I think I mentioned this before. I've actually used mine. I have one that I got earlier this summer at the Toast the Host event in Green Bay. We had this was the listener appreciation gift at that event, and I used it all summer long for my iced coffee. It was really good.
Yeah, sure you did.
I did. With a little Irish whiskey in there.
Yeah, right.
You can make your pledge at WPR.org. Whether you want the glasses or not, your support is very important. Your pledge can be any amount that works for you. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Show your support for the Joy Cardine Show on this last day of the fall membership drive.
All right, stand by, Bill. We'll talk to you in just a little bit. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking this hour with John Sharpless and Joe Winicky, and we welcome your input, too. Let me welcome our guests who have been standing by, listening to us ask for your support. John Sharpless is a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Joe Winicky is a former Wisconsin State Senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, John.
Well, this we're going to talk mostly politics, and I guess there very well could be a political angle to Hurricane Matthew. It is currently hugging the east coast of Florida this morning, bringing with it very heavy winds. I think it's a Category 3 at this point. It's on its way to Jacksonville. What are you two watching as this storm continues to move along the east coast? Joe?
Well, 41 years ago, in my freshman year of college, I took Werner Sumi's introduction meteorology course and got a C, so I'm an expert.
I know. You're not an expert in hurricanes for sure, but I mean, President Obama called it a state of emergency.
Well,
Governor Scott was saying, this storm will kill you, evacuate.
No.
Now people are watching and wondering, will this have any political implications too?
I think for politicians, what was perceived as a lack of interest in the hurricane that struck New Orleans in the Bush administration, and then he had to recover from a position which looked as if he didn't care. And then, of course, he went down there. A lesson was relearned by politicians that you have to be concerned. I remember years ago seeing a quote from Eugene McCarthy in Minnesota, and he said one of the things he absolutely loathed was visiting disaster areas.
Yeah.
It was absolutely necessary, of course, because you have to show your concern. There's nothing you can do about it except for promising aid and hoping for the best and standing there with the people.
And getting in the way.
And getting in the way. But you have to be there. And so I think one thing that's happened, and maybe it's for the best, maybe these politicians now take these incidents more seriously and we anticipate them better than we ever have in the past.
Well, we wish everybody along the path of Hurricane Matthew well. Let's move into some of the big political stories of the week. And let's start right here in Wisconsin. This was earlier in the week, Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to take up an appeal of a decision that had shut down the John Doe 2 investigation, which was looking into whether Governor Walker's recall campaign was coordinating with conservative groups. The decision was issued without any explanation, meaning the case known as John Doe 2 is over. Was that the right decision, John?
I would have been surprised if they had done anything other than that. The Supreme Court, over the years, has been loath to intervene in these kinds of matters. The one thing, remember, they don't want to open up a can of worms that has to do with John Doe investigations. They don't want to challenge that. That's an enormous set of issues, and that wasn't being disputed. It was largely based on the members of the Supreme Court failing to recuse themselves because they had a stake in the outcome of this dispute. They could have offered a limited decision on that. Anyway, it's a kind of case the Supreme Court views as political and not judicial.
Mm-hmm. What was your reaction to the Supreme Court's decision, Joe?
It didn't surprise me either. You needed 5 votes to overturn the appeals court, and we have a 4-4 court right now. So the chances of it getting overturned were highly unlikely. However, if Scott Walker thinks he got off on this, especially after The Guardian released all that information, Scott Walker's hands got very dirtied on this, and he looks horrible, and he looks a little crooked.
You think he looks crooked?
Whether he looks crooked or not, I'll leave it to the Republicans and Democrats out there to sort out. One of the things that I've come to conclude about these kinds of scandals, and I put that word in quote, is that the public has grown very cynical about campaign finance manipulations. They've just rolled their eyes. They've come to believe, with some justification, that everybody does it. And it's hard to drive a campaign on that issue. And this one, of course, was even more complicated because it had multiple groups, it had intermediaries, it has the whole issue of whether or not John Doe investigations can go on for a long period of time. I mean, there were levels upon levels of issues here. Scott Walker may have been slightly damaged by it, but I suspect people who still like Scott Walker still like him. People who don't like Scott Walker, this is just another indication of a regime that they would like to see pass.
This is actually one area where I think John and I do disagree, because I think this is just a complete symptom of what's happened to our now corrupt political system, and it's all caused by money. It's the Citizens United case. It's the Beck decision. It's this notion that money equates to speech, and it has corrupted our system. Yes, it is a bipartisan corruption, John. It is. But I think this influence of money is destroying a proud and great American political system, because those who have way more power than the rest of us, and it is corrupting.
Joe, money has always been there. You just didn't see it. Now you see it.
Money, but you don't even know who gives it.
Let me go on my rant about this.
I knew we would.
If you want to get money out of politics, get government out of people's lives. It's that simple. There are too many outcomes that are really, really important to people in American society. Powerful people, not so powerful people. It's called lobbying. It's called organizing to have outcomes that sustain and help you as a citizen. If you want to get money out of politics, get government out of people's lives. It's that simple. As long as we have up to 60% of our economy dependent on state and local and federal government, people will be investing in outcomes. They will do it. They will find a way. The money will find a way. Your indignation is wonderful, Joe, but there's been money there all along. Back in the 1890s, there was money there. There's been money in politics since Andy Jackson was out raising money on the stump and handing out whiskey to the people who gave him a dollar.
Well, thank you. But, John, you're a history professor, and of course it was the robber barons and the lumber barons that created the progressive movement under Bob La Follette and Francis McGovern in this state, and we cleaned it up.
Oh, we did.
We did clean it up for 100 years in this state. We had clean election laws. When I was in the legislature, I couldn't legally take a cup of coffee.
Let me move on to a related issue. While the U.S. Supreme Court isn't going to take up John Doe 2, Assembly Democrats have asked Dane County's district attorney to launch a pay-to-play investigation based in part on the documents that from John Doe 2 that were released to The Guardian, and then The Guardian wrote the story. In addition, Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has asked the Attorney General to launch an investigation into who leaked the documents to The Guardian. So maybe it's not completely over. Joe, what do you make of a pay-to-play investigation?
On this one, to quote the great Roy Orbison, it's over. what can you do? I mean, if Ishozan takes this up, it'll be viewed as, oh, another Dane County liberal judge taking it up, and it won't change anything.
And I don't think Ozan wants to take this on. He's got other things to do. And the whole business about who leaked the stuff that made me look bad, I've always been... That happens on both sides. When the Democrat had all their emails leaked and exposed the way in which they worked to defeat Bernie Sanders, they said, the Russians have done it. And don't look at the man behind the curtain.
And then there's these 33,000 emails of Hillary's that Republicans keep bringing up as she should be put in jail, put in jail. I hear it all the time. What happened to the 22 million emails that Bush and Cheney lost?
Okay. Oops. Well, let me welcome in Bill Martins for just a couple of minutes as we are going to update the fall membership drive. It looks like, Bill, we are making our way toward that goal.
Yep, we're getting there. We need 38 more by 9 o'clock, so a little less than one per minute, and we can reach that hourly goal. And you can do that at WDPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We will take a short break, and then we will take some of your calls on the issues of the week during this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine with John Sharpless and Joe Winicky. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mm-hmm. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top political news stories of the week. We welcome your input, too, but we also welcome your pledge of support to Wisconsin Public Radio during our fall membership drive, the last weekday of the fall membership drive. Bill Martins joins me to encourage you to make a pledge to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Show your pledge of support for the Joy Cardine Show and the Week in Review. We've got John Sharpless and Joe Winicky here, one of your favorite pairings, I should say. And we talk about the top state and political stories of the week. And by God... Gall darn it, we have fun doing it, too, is what I was trying to say. Can you tell it's been a long pledge drive?
Yes, it has. You're doing your Al Franken impression there? I think you were.
WPR.org or 888-202-2552. That much I can say.
Thanks to Mary from Port Washington, who says, my drive time is so enjoyable learning from the many WPR interviews. I have been a listener for many years. Thank you very much, Mary, for your support. Esther from Madison says, I used to talk on the phone when I drove. A near-miss accident ended that habit. Well, good. I'm glad that it was a near-miss and that you ended the habit. Now I listen to WPR, which is much safer, more interesting, and always available. All right. Well, good. I'm glad you're listening right now. And maybe you pledged right now. Thank you, Esther. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Make your pledge of any amount. Maybe it's $5 a month. Maybe it's $50. You decide how much to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. And then make that pledge, help support this listener-supported radio service. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. All right, back now to our political discussion with John Sharpless and Joe Winicky. We have some callers who want to talk about John Doe, so a little bit more on that, and then we'll move on. Nate in Milwaukee. Hi, Nate.
Hi, thank you. There are a lot of different points to the John Doe case, whether it was making it easier for corruption to happen or the state Supreme Court basically changing the law after Walker got caught to get him off. There's also a couple ironies, like when he was caught by the fake coat call and the Act 10 protests, Walker admitted that he knew enough about coordination or campaign finance law to know what he was doing. It was probably breaking the law because he wanted to catch Democrats doing it, or during the recall, he went around. His supporters said you can't recall him because he didn't break any crime, which isn't quite true for the recall. And here he was breaking the law to win that election.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Nate. We're having a little bit of trouble hearing you on your phone, but I think we're getting most of it here. Nate thinks there was a lot of things to resolve here with the U.S. Supreme Court taking this up. Maybe we should clarify that there were a number of different issues being considered here. But what does this mean that it is now and forever will be legal for a candidate like Governor Walker to raise money, unlimited donations, but not for his own campaign, but to a third party group to say, hey, I'll give your donation to a third party group, which will support me anyway. But so now that's okay to do that.
We're a system of laws. We have been for 240 years or so, and it went through the political process. Do I think Scott Walker was guilty? As what did you say? I can't use that one word. Very guilty. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. Do I think it went through the system with a partisan, you know, Wisconsin Supreme Court and an understaffed U.S. Supreme Court? Yes. There is a way to fix this for Nat and others. It's to elect somebody who will change the Supreme Court.
And you, John Sharpless, even if we can proceed now with the way the campaign finance law is being interpreted, it's okay. You don't think it's a big deal?
Well, again, I come back to my argument here. You can debate particular laws. Remember, the laws are written by the people who prosper from money. Campaign finance laws are always written. It doesn't matter if the Republicans and Democrats work on it together or in opposition. These laws are crafted to make sure incumbents can stay in office, and that the laws are filled with loopholes. What's happened here is the Supreme Court of the state of Wisconsin has created another loophole. I come back to my original position on this. The money will find a way. It will find a way, whether or not Scott Walker is holding fundraisers for the Fitzgerald brothers, or the Fitzgerald brothers are holding a fundraiser for Scotty, or I'm holding a fundraiser for Scotty. The money will find a way. Politics are driven by money. It's extraordinarily expensive to be political in America today. It's even costly to run for county board. So, and people want from government specific things to make their lives, their businesses, their welfare better, and they will invest in those outcomes. It is, I hate to bring this up, I know there's a lot of listeners that don't like this word, it's capitalism. People are buying a piece of the action. You can't stop it. I think you could. What we should work on is making it visible. The people who are investing in the outcomes should be visible to all of us. Their names should be attached to the money so we know exactly where it comes from. And then we can decide whether or not we like that association of people.
But it's capitalism run amok, John. And if we could do two things, we could at least fix it somewhat. One, have nonpartisan redistricting reform similar to Iowa. And two, have the disclosure you want. Everybody should have to stand by the money they spend.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you on nonpartisan realignment, both for federal seats and for state seats.
Yep.
Until we get away, see, I this is personal to me. I would have run against Tammy again had not the gang in Washington reorganized the second district and made it decidedly Democrat.
That's true.
I had a chance in a next election to beat her had it stayed the second district that it was. But they knew that. And in return, see, she got a safe district and Ryan got a state district. Yeah. So they actually, people who normally don't talk to each other, go in a smoke-filled room, they put a map on the table, and they lay it out so that they can stay in office. I'm shocked.
This is absolutely true. I was there in the legislature when what basically happened is the senior Democrat and the senior Republican in Congress from Wisconsin would come in and tell us what they wanted for a congressional map.
There you go.
It happened.
Let's talk about another issue. While John Doe 2 might be over, a voter ID or challenges to the voter ID law in Wisconsin, not over yet. A federal judge is going to consider a request next week to temporarily block voter ID in Wisconsin. This is after ordering an investigation into reports that the Division of Motor Vehicle employees were giving inaccurate information to people who were looking for state-issued IDs. What's your take on this situation, Joe, in terms of possibly stopping voter ID because the DMV is making mistakes in issuing?
Well, this is Judge Peterson's ruling.
I think so. He's going to consider next week.
Right. Yeah. Well, and of course, this was the state government after he had done a cease and desist order ignoring him. And there's nothing worse than a judge who has his a dander up. And I would not be shocked if he throws the darn thing out. Because, you know, if this was one case, you could blame it on an employee who didn't get it. But they've documented like seven of these in seven different areas. This is coordinated. And it clearly is being told these guys from on high what they're supposed to do.
John?
I don't sense that, Joe. The judge is going to be angry if there's any sign here they're intentionally violating his court order to make it easy for people to receive an alternative ID. If he finds that they've been stonewalling that intentionally, I find it hard to believe that the people out there at Hilldale, at the motor vehicle office, who I assume are good state employees, are mindlessly obedient to Scotty Walker and are intentionally throwing up barriers to people when they come in and ask for their ID. I think it's a screw-up. But either way, the judge is going to be irritated. The screw-up makes it perhaps less troubling, but still, it's a screw-up. Now, if it turns out that from the top down, state employees are being ordered to obscure and make this difficult, this judge is going to be really angry.
And really harsh.
You will see this law thrown out if that is the case. One of the things that's being argued, however, which is fascinating to me, is that those who are claiming there's been a violation go on to argue that it's impossible even with good intent for the DMV to handle this problem, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
They're saying, yes, there has been a problem, but even if they were acting in good conscience, this organization is incapable of handling this task.
Well, and John, they've closed so many and reduced the hours of so many of the rural DMV places. If you don't have easy access to drive 30, 40, 50, 60 miles, it is a hassle.
And those are Republican voters.
Yes, they are. They're Trump voters, even.
If I'm not mistaken, the Transportation Secretary Gottlieb has ordered retraining of employees to make sure that they know what they're doing.
But that doesn't deal with what Joe's talking about. What's happened in the last decade, not simply under Walker, but they've cut back on DMV access across the state, both in the central cities and in the rural areas. It's one of those areas, interestingly enough, where it makes the it's fascinating. This is one of the places where the rubber hits the road, not to be punny, in terms of the public. This is something we all need to do. We need to renew our license plates. We need to renew our driver's licenses.
And the government's got to have the guts to raise some money in the transportation fund.
Absolutely.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review, talking today with Joe Winicky and John Sharpless and Bill Martens, as this is the last day of our fall membership drive, the last weekday, your last opportunity to pledge during the Joy Cardine Show, and your only or last opportunity to pledge during The Week in Review. So, Bill, how's it going?
We need 34 more pledges by 9 o'clock to reach our hourly goal. So if you have not made your pledge yet, act now, because, as Joy said, this is the last shot you have to show your pledge of support for the Joy Cardine Show during this fall membership drive. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember, not only do you get the satisfaction of supporting a service that you value and a show that you appreciate, we do have a thank you gift for your pledge of $7 a month or more. We will send you the set of two WPR pint glasses. They've got both the WPR and the NPR logos on them, and you can enjoy your favorite beverage and show off your support for Wisconsin Public Radio. Wonder why they gave us the pint glasses for The Week in Review. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks, Bill. We'll keep on checking in on this last day of the fun drive for the Joy Cardine Show.
Can we be assured that it's a true pint?
We should. Somebody go find a pint something and we'll pour it in there.
I think I have some on my desk.
In England, when you go into bars, they have this. I don't know, it was a stage in English history where they actually had government regulators go around, and it actually has a line that says a pint to the line.
I was in Ireland late May, early June, and there's a definite.
There's a line on there.
Yep.
Because nothing's worse to an Irishman or an Englishman than being cheated on their beer.
And I think the Guinness is better in Ireland. Just that story's true.
You know, John, you were talking about how you had considered challenging U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, back when it was when she was in Congress. But conservative talk show host Charlie Sykes announced this week that he is leaving his popular WTMJ radio show in December. He is denying rumors that he's doing this to challenge U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. Some were thinking that he was leaving the show so that he could challenge her politically. He was, of course, the leader of what many were calling the Never Trump movement in Wisconsin. Joe Winicky, how surprised were you that Charlie Sykes decided to step down?
Somewhat, although I'm no confidant. From my perspective, the talk of running for the Senate, for example, after going into the Wow counties, which is where his major listenership is in Waukesha and Washington, Ozaukee, and bashing the Republican standard bearer for 6 months, I don't think is a way to get elected in a primary. But I think from what I've seen, what I'm sensing from Charlie Sykes is he sees a Republican Party about to turn into a civil war amongst themselves, and he wants to be on the outside looking in, writing about it.
John, what do you think?
I'm going to miss Charlie. It's been interesting over the years. We're hardly close friends. He's often been very critical of my kind of Republicanism, but he's damn bright, and I really enjoy him. And he's one of the better political talk show hosts in this country. It may be that he has some other opportunities in that industry, and he wants to move on. It would be fascinating if he tried to leverage his listenership into a campaign. I don't know how far he's syndicated into the state. I've always viewed his show as primarily a Milwaukee area show. So I don't know those Republicans up there in the northern part of the state, what they might know him by name, but I don't know if they know him by voice.
No, but he is.
You certainly can't hear it up there. Yeah. I mean, it's probably half the state. You can get some level of of listening. I don't listen to Charlie Sykes much, but I listen to the Brewer sometimes.
I tune in when he goes on a rant about how I'm really a liberal in disguise.
I always thought you were kind of a libertarian.
Charlie was, I think, really felt his oats when he took on the Trump campaign and managed to give Cruz, and who was his choice, a victory in the primary. And he was, that group of talk show hosts were so effective. They managed not only to get Cruz first, but Kasich second. Yeah. I mean, people forget Trump was a distant third in the state. He got hammered.
He won one congressional district.
And he's not doing all that great in the Wild Counties right now, which is why people are saying he's he's coming back to shore up support there. And maybe try to overtake Hillary Clinton's very small lead. We have.
So, Joy, how does he get around suburban women? I mean, calling people Miss Piggy and fat and stuff is not a way to endear yourself to voters.
Oh, so why is he only 2 points behind the latest Marquette poll, I wonder?
I think that poll's a little old.
I think it's. You look at the actual data on his following, and he has a substantial number of women who support him. I'm not sure what that's about. I can't unwrap that. But they're certainly there for him. So I don't think he's going to win, as you point out, the sort of soccer moms. He's pretty rough on that. His language is just seems too rough for that kind of person. But he clearly has attracted a large group of women who are willing to support him despite his rhetoric. I don't know what that's about. I don't know what goes on there. The estimates run from about 35% to 45% of his support lies with women, predominantly working class.
But that is 35% or 40% of 40%.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's, so we take it as what it is.
Well, let me just get a couple of comments from both you on the Wisconsin becoming the spotlight again with Trump is coming on Saturday, second visit in a couple of weeks. He's going to be at the tell me where he's going to be from.
He's going to be at Elkhorn.
Yeah, Elkhorn.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting choice.
And Bernie Sanders was in Wisconsin this week.
The big dog's coming tomorrow.
And Elizabeth Warren
is here
today.
Bill Clinton tomorrow.
Oh, now Bill Clinton tomorrow. I didn't know that. Okay, that's new on me. So so how come Hillary's not coming?
I think if they felt a need for her to be in Wisconsin, she'd be here.
What does that mean? Does it mean that
she's ahead?
Yeah. I
think it's interesting they're bringing in so many of their heavy hitters. I'm a little surprised. I would think that the Democrats right now would be confident about this state, but those three people that they're bringing in are hardly lightweights in terms of their army of mobilizers. And to put them all in the state at once suggests to me that they have private polling data that says that her lead is not what
tenuous.
Whether Trump can pull off the state, I would really be surprised. Remember, let's take a step back in time. Paul Ryan, who's from this state, very, very popular, wasn't able to move this state into the Republican column in a competitive election
with a competent competent running mate.
That's right, with a competent running mate. And you look at I've tried to explain this to my fellow Republicans. They just can't get it through their head. The West Coast of this state, at the local level, votes conservative But when it comes to national elections, they vote Democrat. That hasn't been broken for decades, and they can't unwrap it. I think, by the way, it has to do with health care and Social Security. Mm-hmm. You step into small towns, and those people...
Probably Medicare as well.
Yeah, Medicare. Those people believe strongly in those issues, and if you threaten them on those issues, even though they're personally conservative, they may be a hunter and they believe in the Second Amendment, they may believe be a strong Catholic and they believe in pro-life, but those issues are so close to home, if you threaten them in any way, they're on the Democrat side for that one election. They'll still vote conservative for the state house. Mm-hmm. They'll still vote conservative for the governor. But when it comes to a national election, it's particularly true along the Mississippi River, up through all the way up to Lake Superior.
It's basically Dubuque to Superior.
By the way, Trump will be at the 1st Congressional District Republican Party's annual Fall Fest on Saturday with Speaker Paul Ryan, Senator Ron Johnson, and Governor Scott Walker. They're all going to be there at the Fall Fest.
What a way to get swing voters.
And Bill Clinton will be in Milwaukee on Saturday, but an official location not announced yet anyway.
He's showing up to speak out against Obamacare.
Well, yep. We will talk about that coming up in our next segment.
One tiny thing. Of all these candidates, they're doing a Midwest swing right now. Bernie Sanders was in Minnesota, then Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Today he's in Michigan. I think they're shoring up the Midwest so they can fight their fights in the states they think they have to later.
We're going to talk about Bill Clinton's comments on the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. He said it was a crazy system or something like that. And we will talk about... whether Donald Trump's not paying federal taxes is brilliant or genius, or if it's unfair and unpatriotic. That's another issue making news on the campaign trail. But first, Bill Martins is here with an update on our fall membership drive. How are we doing, Bill?
Well, we've got about 15 minutes left in this hour, and we need 27 more pledges to reach that hourly goal. So if you haven't made that pledge, it's time to act now and show your support for the Joy Cardine Show and the Week in Review, WDPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are going to be talking about many of these issues again on Monday. Bill produces the Joy Cardine Show, and you're producing the State Capitol Report, and what are we going to have?
Well, at 7 o'clock, we've got Scott Ross from One Wisconsin Now coming on to talk about the voter ID hearing that's coming up next week. And then at 7:30, we've got Steve Prestigard, one of our weekend reviewers, who's kind of a media guy as well and used to be on Charlie Sykes' TV program a lot. And he's going to come on and talk about what Charlie Sykes means to Republican politics here in Wisconsin. And then at 6 o'clock, we should also mention that we're going to have a political scientist from Washington University in St. Louis, which just happens to be the site of Sunday's big presidential debate.
How did that happen?
We're just that good.
Yeah. We are going to be talking, the presidential debate. We're talking state politics. We are your place to be for politics, and that, thanks largely to the efforts of Bill Martins. You are also lining up interviews with all of the candidates on the ballot. For Congress, for
there are
some
21 that we on the Joy Cardine Show are reaching out to. We're reaching out to the candidates for U.S. Senate. Us in Central Time are working on the candidates for the congressional races, and then a couple of state Senate races as well. So, going to be a busy couple of weeks at the end of October. Be talking with a lot of candidates
because you count on Wisconsin Public Radio for this complete and fair coverage of issues and races and candidates. Make your pledge now to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And we know that you love the Week in Review, and we know that you especially like to hear Joe Winicky and John Sharpless on together because you think it's provocative yet civil, and it's complete and profound at times. All the time. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We need 25 more pledges in the next 13 minutes to reach that goal, and help us do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you to Tanner from Madison who pledged. He says, thank you for providing a cool, rational voice of reason. So, see, there we go. All WPR.org right. Or 888-202-2552. We will talk more about some of the issues making news on the presidential campaign trail in just a moment. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today with John Sharpless, a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Joe Winicky, a former state senator and former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Let's talk now about taxes. Donald Trump is calling the possibility that he hasn't paid federal income taxes for a couple of decades smart. Brilliant, genius. Most Americans are calling it unpatriotic, though, according to a poll. Hillary Clinton is saying that this is unfair and it's not supporting our troops and such, and that Trump's tax plan would help actually wealthy taxpayers like him. So how big a deal is this, Joe Winicky?
Huge.
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 Huge. It is. We all pay taxes except, I guess, Donald Trump.
No, a lot of people don't pay
taxes. Yes, but many of the people who don't are 15 and 14 and 12 and 80. And, you know, if you talk about people of working age, the vast, vast, vast majority of people pay taxes.
But there's a whole bunch of people like Trump who don't pay taxes.
Is this right?
I will not defend Trump, but this give me a break here and give him a break. If he had an opportunity to write off a substantial loss, and I think it says more about the businessman he's been claiming to be to have such an enormous loss, but if you have that loss, it is foolish not to write it off. How many Americans have opportunities for deductions and loss write-offs who say to themselves, I'm not going to take this because I'm patriotic? Do you not declare your children because it's unpatriotic?
Loss carry forward provisions help a handful of really rich dudes.
Yeah. Well, no,
and they're mostly guys.
It was legal according at the time. I'm understanding that, you know, they might have worked on that loophole, but
then release your taxes, Donald. Let the world see what you did. Because this notion that he doesn't is shameful. He should be disqualified for running for office for this issue alone.
He's a damn fool on so many issues. I would have released my taxes back in July.
Take it out of the way.
Taken the heat. Got beat up a little bit by the press, and it wouldn't be brought up now.
Yeah, no,
it would be old news now. He has managed to make this an issue going into the election because he was so stupid that he didn't issue the release all his taxes way early. He should have released them back in the primaries. This would be history. It would be old news. He to wait this long was to create a moment which is absolutely perfect for the liberal New York Times, the liberal Hillary-loving newspaper of the country, to write an expose on it. He created that moment.
Trump's campaign ended up releasing a statement after that New York Times report, and Donald Trump talked about it on the campaign trail, too. The statement said, Mr. Trump knows the tax code far better than anyone who has ever run for president, and he is the only one who knows how to fix it.
His accountants may know the tax code better. I don't think Donald knows anything except for his own megalomania.
All right. Give me a break.
I really don't like the guy.
No.
Well,
I see Donald in his off hours not hanging around a casino, but reading the tax code in front of a fire. I mean, he's one of the few Americans who's actually read the tax code cover to cover. Give me a break.
Well, let's move on to another topic that made news this week. Former President Bill Clinton criticized the Affordable Care Act this week while stumping in Michigan, saying that it floods the insurance market and raises premiums for middle-class Americans who do not qualify for subsidies. Clinton called it the craziest thing in the world. He later tried to ease up on his criticism, but what do you think... Joe Winicky first, was this a mistake by Bill Clinton? Is this going to hurt Hillary Clinton?
It isn't going to hurt Hillary Clinton, but the truth hurts. I mean, this, you know, Obamacare, as it's called, the Affordable Care Act, was not written by Barack Obama. It was written by Congress the same way they write campaign finance laws. They took care of the insurance industry. So now we have this hybrid where the insurance companies decide if they want to play or not. They set the rates, and we pay the bill. This is nuts. We should be going to Medicare for all.
Is that what Hillary Clinton wants to do?
She wants to move that way. That's what the public option is.
I am so glad Bill blew the whistle on this thing. This law is a mess, and it was a mess from the beginning. I fully understand the need for health care for all Americans. But built into this law, as Joe has pointed out, the powerful insurance industry, which Obama all through his campaign told me were malevolent and manipulative, they're now embedded in our legislation, and by a decision of the Supreme Court, they are the only private industry that we are pledged under penalty of law to give our money to. No other private industry has that exalted position. We have to buy insurance from a private vendor. There is no alternative. If there was a federal alternative and you could pick a private vendor over a federal alternative, it would be slightly better. This is awful. They have a privilege that no one in American history, and I might say in the leading nations of the world, has. It's just awful. And it's hurting small business. It's hurting all kinds of people who are at the lower levels of our society. And I will tell you another thing. There are thousands of Americans who are simply not cooperating with this law, and they will eventually be put in a position of criminal prosecution. It's trivial now. It's a federal misdemeanor not to make the payment in your taxes. But when it accumulates over time, these people will have a sizable obligation to the federal government, and we will have a choice. We will either put them in jail or we'll take this law and throw it out the window.
Well, except for the very last part, which I think might be a little strong. I don't see them doing that. I largely agree with John, although I would add, I think the pharmaceutical companies have the same deal. Because we can't regulate rates.
Let me just get you both as we are wrapping up here. What did you think of the vice presidential debate? Everybody thinks Mike Pence won. Do you think he won, Joe?
I don't think either one of them won. I thought it was a disaster. I don't know what these two were doing. Pence had a calmer demeanor, and all the pundits look at is were you calm or not? These guys were. Pence lied through his teeth. My guy was way too in your face. It was. I mean, even though a lot of what he said, I believe. But nobody votes for president based on a vice presidential debate anyway, so in a couple days, nobody will remember it.
Professor Sharpless?
I guess I came away really perplexed about the debate. Obviously, Pence was put in a position, and of course he should have been. He's the vice president. He has to defend his candidate, who clearly is a man who has trouble controlling himself. I thought Pence's demeanor was superior. His demeanor was calm. It was focused. He had a little trick that I was taught during the campaign, and I'm sure Joe remembers this. If you're in politics, you look at the camera,
yes,
not at the person who's interviewing you. Pence did that. It was really very important. It made him seem more connected. Remember, debates are in part about issues, and I would say in this campaign, a small, tiny part about issues. But they're also about how comfortable we feel with the person, and I think Pence captured that.
Are you guys? We have to wrap this up. I was going to have you preview the town hall, the presidential town hall, but we don't have time. Are you going to watch it, or are you going to watch the Packers?
Both.
Packers.
Oh, I think this is going to be the greatest show on earth. I got to see Trump in that type of environment with a town hall, which he doesn't do. And I think he's going to get slaughtered.
You should watch old Clinton and Obama were the two greatest town hall speakers. You should watch old tapes of Clinton. Clinton was fantastic in the town hall.
Maybe he should be prepping on Saturday and then instead of going to Elkhorn.
Thank you both very, very much for being with us. This has been a great week in review. John Sharpless, professor of history at UW-Madison. Jill Winicky, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Thank you both. We have just a minute, Bill Martins, to encourage listeners to pledge during the week in review.
That's right. We need 8 more in these final seconds here to reach our hourly goal. So wouldn't it be terrific to go 3 for 3 this morning on our goals? Our listeners have really been coming through today, and let's keep that up for this remaining minute. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, you're going to be able to keep on pledging through the news. We will reach this goal with your help because you appreciate the week in review discussions that we have each week with guests like John Sharpless and Jill Winicky. WPR.org, pledge any amount, or 888-202-2552.
And if you can do $7 a month, be sure to ask for your set of 2 WPR pint glasses. They've got the WPR and NPR logos. You'll be proud to drink any beverage from them. Toast to our Week in Review guest, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you if you've already pledged to Wisconsin Public Radio or if you are an ongoing member. We really do count on you. We couldn't be here without you. Now, if you haven't, still time, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This is the Ideas Network.